Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Thursday. A big day of developments. A lot of breaking news all across this country. Ongoing stories that I think are going to have a profound effect on the election, on this summer ahead, and on some of the big issues that Americans are going to probably end up having to resolve at the ballot box in November. First up, in the impeachment inquiry, House Judiciary Committee Jim Jordan sued the Justice Department trying to compel 2 tax division attorneys to testify about Hunter Biden's tax case and whether there was interference, political interference in the case, like the whistleblowers, the IRS whistleblowers testified. That is the first major subpoena fight that this impeachment inquiry has had. It's something that we're going to keep a close eye on. Remember, there was a possibility they were going to sue Hunter Biden. We'll see what happens on that. But I do think that that is an important development and one that we're going to have to keep a close eye on throughout the next few weeks. Meanwhile, looking ahead in the Manhattan cases, there are 2 cases. There's the criminal case against Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump got a little bit of an unexpected win today. A federal judge ruled that the star witness in the New York state trial against Donald Trump, that's the New York criminal state trial against Donald Trump, that's Michael Cohen, the former fixer, the former lawyer for Donald Trump. The federal judge ruled that Cohen must finish the rest of his probationary requirements, supervised release requirements, because it's likely he committed perjury. He said that there is a complete inherent conflict between some testimony and some plea between the two. One of those was perjury. The idea that he'd be tarred as a perjurious witness just before he's about to be the star witness against Donald Trump, a big problem for Alvin Bragg and probably an opportunity for Trump and his lawyers to cast further doubt on Michael Cohen, a significantly shamed former lawyer for the former president. Republicans unveiled just 25, 36 hours before they're going to vote on it, 1,200 pages of $1.2 trillion in new spending. That's right. Another temporary spending bill dropped at the last minute. Boy, there is some anger about that today. People slamming it left and right. I think perhaps the most interesting one, Andrew Clyde, a guy that comes on this show often, congressman from Georgia. At 2:32 a.m. when Americans were sleeping, the swamp released its second half of the omnibus. It spent $1.2 trillion of taxpayers' dollars on disastrous policies. The House is still expected to vote on this monstrosity tomorrow morning. Washington is beyond broken. Washington is beyond broken. Marjorie Taylor Greene on the show just a few days ago. It takes 27.8 hours for the average reader to read 1,000 pages. I guess we're supposed to just pass it first and find out what's in later. That's wrong. Remember, this is the sort of tactics that Republicans ran against in 2022. They were going to break this system. They're back to temporary spending bills. They're back to earmarks. They're back to dropping big bills with 24 hours notice before the vote. Republicans are hardly going to distinguish themselves if they start acting like and spending at the levels of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. By the way, this new bill will bring overall spending, I think, to $30 billion more than what Nancy Pelosi achieved on her most expensive budget. not a good record. We've got a perfect first guest to tackle that one. Josh Perkeen, congressman from Oklahoma, a member of the Republican Study Committee that put together that new blueprint that balances the budget and reduces taxes by $5 trillion. He's going to be on the show. I'm pretty certain, we'll ask him, but I'm pretty certain Congressman Perkeen is going to vote against this omnibus or minibus bill that's coming out tomorrow. But he's going to give us a lowdown on what's going on, what's next, is there a consequence for Mike Johnson, the speaker, that's acting even, I would say, differently than former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. One could argue that he's actually conceded more to Democrats in the short period of time. We'll see. Certainly had more temporary spending bills. But we'll get all that in the first block of the show. I'm really super excited about that. Now, a few more headlines, and I'll tell you the rest of the guest lineup today. But new polling out. Marist polls out. Donald Trump, in the last 7 days, is up in every single of the seven battleground states. That's right. Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada. He's up, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 points in all the battlegrounds. That's rare for a Republican to be up in a general election presidential race this early. And it's a sign that Joe Biden is in some difficulty, in some trouble. And I think that will be a dynamic that we're going to have to keep an eye on throughout. Donald Trump looking strong right now. Now, I mentioned earlier, Michael Cohen gets whacked at, but another thing that just happened a few minutes ago, Letitia James, the attorney general from New York, who is pursuing the civil case, the one that is trying to take $460 million from Donald Trump. She's begun the first step, the first process, in maybe seizing some of Donald Trump's famed properties to try to force him to pay his penalty. That's a pretty extraordinary development. We'll keep a close eye on that, but that one's moving as well. So subpoenas and property seizures and more Republican hypocrisy on spending. Just a few of the stories that are going to be rattling around in there. And of course, another one is Donald Trump right now in a strong position in the polls. I think a lot of members of the media are extraordinarily shocked by it. I'm not, but others are. Overnight, James Comer encouraged Joe Biden to testify. He's going to send a letter request. I don't think Joe Biden's going to do it, but there's a reason for it, right? Yesterday during the hearing, which we covered extensively in the podcast yesterday, there is overwhelming evidence from firsthand eyewitness accounts. I mean, these are people that actually were in the room with Joe Biden when he called, or when Joe Biden attended a dinner, or when they met with him. And Joe Biden was regularly meeting with business clients and business partners of Hunter Biden. And in one of those involving a Russian oligarch, one of those meetings, phone calls, it was an admonition from the vice president. The sitting vice president said to a foreign oligarch and her team, "Be good to my boy. Be good to my boy." Boy, that's more than just meeting. That's giving a direction. One could take that as a solicitation, I suspect. Those are pretty significant revelations. And that's why Congress clearly wants to have a conversation with the president. I don't think they're going to get it, but there is a pretty significant conversation about to be had there. One more important story. Again, as I said, Donald Trump up in the polls. That's one sign. There's a new poll out by the Center Square, a great statehouse news agency that we use here at Just the News. Good friends there. Joe Biden is down. 60% of independents actually disapprove of his performance. Let me say that again. 60% of independents, the sort of people that settle elections. Remember, that's the people that settle elections. 60% of them disapprove of the president's performance. Independent voters, the swing voters, that's a big problem for Joe Biden. There's plenty of time to reverse it. But again, Trump up, disapproval of Joe Biden way up when it comes to independent voters, the people who settle elections. Those are some of the dynamics that we're all going to be watching here at justthenews.com, or if you download the Just the News app from the Apple and Android stores. Now, we've got a couple more good guests for you. In the second block today, Kelly Loeffler is going to be here. She's the former U.S. Senator from Georgia. Since she lost and left office, she has put a good part of her time into building an early voting, get out the vote machine in Georgia. It had some great success in 2022, but it's running even bigger ahead in 2024. In the primary, one of the largest numbers or largest percentages of Republicans ever voted early in the Republican primary, where Donald Trump won easily. Kelly Loeffler is going to explain why that's working. She's got a very important project. She's got it working. She's one of the groundbreaking people, people like Lee Zeldin, and of course, the new Republican National Committee co-chairman and chairwoman, Laura Trump, and Michael Whatley, good friend of mine. These are really, really significant advancements. And I think all of them are putting Republicans a little bit more on even par in the early voting game. A lot of people are going to vote early now. It's just the way, whether you like it or not, that's the rules. That's the expectation. And now I think for the first time, there's some real evidence that the Republicans are getting caught up in a game that they've been way behind of. Certainly in 18, 20, 22, they didn't do nearly as well as Democrats. They're starting to close the gap. Kelly Loeffler, right there to be a major part of that fix. And she's going to describe what it is, why the mentality is shifting. In the third block, we're going to talk to my good friend, Nicholas Giordano. He's got one of the great podcasts in America, but also he is, I think, one of the most important professors in college, one of the most important advocates of common sense and free speech on campuses where both are in short supply. The protection of free speech is enormously damaged. There's a big gap, and Nick Giordano has been fighting that. And he's going to, he and I had a great conversation with Amanda and me yesterday on the TV show, and we've adapted it for the podcast. I think you're going to like that. So Josh Burkine, Kelly Loeffler, Nick Giordano, back to back to back on a Thursday edition of John Solomon Reports. Now, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Before we do that, as you know, we've got a lot of great partners in the health space because I've been focusing on my health and I want you to have the same advantages I have. We talk about Brickhouse Nutrition and Field of Greens. You know all about that, right? But one of the good innovators is Jace Medical. You've heard all of their great folks come on the show here and talk about it. Jace Medical is in the telemedicine business. They are in the innovation cycle of trying to fix America's supply chain issues, the lack of access to drugs, a 30% shortage in drugs last year. In fact, the FDA just declared not too long ago a global shortage of medication and warned that critical antibiotics are in extreme short supply across the United States. That's not good if you get a sinus infection or some sort of skin infection and you can't get the medicines you need. But Jace Medical came up with the perfect solution. It's called the Jace Case. You know about it. We've talked about it on the show. It's a pack of 5 prescription antibiotics, and you're going to have them on hand for common emergencies. You get them now. You order them after talking to a doctor, going through a licensed pharmacy, and then you have them on hand, and you know when you need to take them. You have them there. You don't have to go to pharmacy and say, sir, I can't help you. You don't want to do that. Now, if you want to take advantage of that, go to jasemedical.com, Jace, J-A-S-E medical.com. Take a few minutes to fill out the form. Your information will be reviewed by a board certified physician. That's pretty cool. Then your medication is going to be dispensed by a licensed pharmacy. It's going to ship right to your door. You don't even have to go in the pharmacy line. You're going to get it right delivered to your door. How convenient is that? Now, you'll be glad you have the Jace Case the next time you're sick and then you realize, I need these antibiotics now. So don't wait. Don't get caught flat-footed. Don't have that moment of remorse when you're sick. Go to jasemedical.com, J-A-S-E medical.com, and enter the code JUSTNEWS at checkout. You're going to get a big discount on your order. That's a good deal. One more time, use the promo code JUSTNEWS at Jace, J-A-S-E medical.com. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Congressman Josh Burkine, one of the champions of trying to cut spending in a Congress that hasn't done a very good job of it, he'll be up next right after these messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As I mentioned at the top of the show, another temporary spending bill, another $1.2 trillion, another dump it on lawmakers, and within a day, you got to vote on it. And there's like 1,200 pages, 1,300 pages. It's a lot of stuff in the spending bill. This was the process that I think Republicans really were sincere about changing thus far. They haven't succeeded. Our next guest, he is a voice of fiscal sanity. every day. He is fighting to cut spending, to position Republicans to hold off and fight back against Democrats who feel like we have a limitless credit card. He is a great congressman from the state of Oklahoma. Josh Berkini joins us right now. Congressman, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, we love having you on. People are craving this moment when the spending cycle finally gets reined in Washington. It didn't happen this spending bill, this minibus. Your initial reaction, and is there any reason for optimism after watching three or four more spending bills, even since Mike Johnson took over?
So my initial reaction to whether or not I vote on this is no. In terms of optimism for the future, yeah, because I think that, the people that our speaker, Mike Johnson, cut his teeth with. I mean, Mike was a part of some incredible groups. And these are real conservative entities. And he's got strong relationships with the real fiscal social groups out there who I know are saying to him, Mr. Speaker, what are we doing here? So here's my optimism. He's handed a horrible deal in terms of a one-seat majority now, finish out 24. My hope is he becomes invigorated after this because of all the people who love him but are saying, what are we doing here? That then he comes out for 25, for what's ahead, and that we would see a new contract with America type vision that we're going to lay out for fiscal year 25. You asked me to be hopeful, and so that's my hope.
Yeah. I think there's a reason to hope yesterday, too, because even as this bill was coming out and the frustrations there that this is a deja vu all over again cycle, the RSC put out a really remarkable document just starting the process of thinking about how you re-engineer government and really start shrinking it for 2025. So the work is starting earlier than in the past, and there's a very clear conservative take to the first of it. Obviously, it's an early document. It's going to get shaped in many ways. But the RSC roadmap yesterday, is that a good starting point, at least to get 2025 looking like a thinner government?
Yeah, look, I'm thankful to Chairman Kevin Hearn, Ben Klein, who heads the task force. I'm on the task force. It's a 7-year pathway blueprint to balance our budget by year 7. If we'll follow these measures, and of course, everybody's going to cry and say it's draconian and, all the garbage out there, the big government and protect the employment of the federal government types. But look, at least there's hope. When 100% of what we're spending our year over debating the discretionary side of the budget is borrowed funds, the $4.4 trillion in revenue that came in last year was only enough to cover the mandatory program spending, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, food stamps, and interest on the debt as the bulk of it. That's all mandatory. The word tells you all you need to know, takes priority, and what's left over where Congress gets to determine the actual funding levels for the discretionary side, that was $1.7 trillion last year. Our deficit was $1.7 trillion last year. That means 100% of what we debate where Congress fixed the top line number for is borrowed funding. So you just got to hope that the average American people, is kind of complicated, but yet as simple as that is looking at their member of Congress saying, you're voting on borrowed money now. Not a dime of it you're spending your time on is paid for. In fact, I was running through my head, John, as I climbed on the elevator yesterday. I don't even want to use the term discretionary money. I want us to re-term our entire 12 appropriation bills and call it the borrowed funding bills. That we would outlaw the term discretionary because it's not discretionary whether our kids have to pay it off. It's mandatory that our kids pay this off.
We're hanging a noose around or hanging a millstone around their neck even before they're old enough to know what's about to hit them. It's such a remarkable debt that we're passing on. There is some good things going on in Congress. This is Energy Week, and I think some of the most important pieces of legislation that came out this week and got passed very quickly, Protecting American Energy Production Act. It's going to keep Joe Biden or any president from banning fracking. That's one of our great advantages in the energy world. Pretty important statement, and it got through the House no problem.
Yeah, and I would love to tell you that this is going to go to the Senate and pass and get signed into law. But we've been down this road before. Last year we had H.R. 1. The number on that bill tells you the priority. It was about returning to energy independence, energy dominance. So we got to cut, and we've got to have a dot-com type boom to our economy. A lot of us are convinced that energy underneath our feet, hundreds of years of energy underneath our feet, that this catalytic converter of Joe Biden is choking out the growth opportunities of our engine to roar. It's choking it out because of adherence to the Church of Nature, climate ideology, radicalism. This humanistic ideology is keeping us from being able to tap these resources. And yet, look, they're also doing it because the trade-off is the more they're the catalytic converter to choke out fossil fuels, then they replace it by rewarding their billionaire friends for wind and solar tax credits. That's the real play, just like it has been for, you know, Captain Planet, that was the cartoon in the 1990s. You know, it's just indoctrination.
Yep.
You know, it's indoctrination of one generation, one decade. It changes its name. It refashions. It's all humanism. It's all worshiping Mother Earth. And it's all really designed to hand power and control to the Democrats for claiming a crisis that's not going to occur.
Yeah. And you look at some of the polling in these battleground states, the one thing people are clamoring for, cheaper energy prices, their home heating, their gas prices, their gasoline at the car. They're begging for this. And these elitists have decided, we don't care that you're in trouble and bleeding money out of your wallet. We want to achieve some larger agenda. And on that note, there was a really fun tweet by you on X the other day, pointing out an expenditure that I think most people will go, you have to be kidding me. All right, we know Joe Biden isn't securing the border. That's why 10 million illegal aliens have crossed across the border. But apparently, he's going to put $1 billion out there to make our ports of entry more climate-friendly. They're also more friendly to terrorists, but they'll at least be climate-friendly, apparently. Not a fake expenditure. This is real, right?
Yeah. He also wants to make so many of his headquarters, I forget exactly the term they use, to where they're more environmentally friendly too, to go in and rehab so many of these GSA properties. It's just madness, man.
It is.
It's just madness. I just got through with the budget hearing where I was talking to Director Young, who's presenting, you know, here's President Biden's budget, where if we change nothing and the way we spend, we're going to add $18 trillion. CBO says $18 trillion in 10 years. So they come out with their budget, and they're going to tax $5 trillion more. So they're going to add $5 trillion more in taxes on the American people. But lo and behold, 10 years from now, they also add $18 trillion to the deficit and debt, or $18 trillion to the debt. So I asked her, I said, you know, I quoted Bill Clinton, which I don't ever do. But I quoted Bill Clinton from almost 2 decades ago, talking about how when he raised taxes, it was to bring down the deficit and debt. And I said, how radicalized has the Democrat Party more or less become to where the party of Bill Clinton would raise taxes, but they applied it to the debt and deficit? And when the Democrats in my home come up to our town hall meetings and they say, well, you've solved the problem, just raise taxes. And Biden's the one who said, show me your budget and I'll show you my priorities. I said to Director Young, you're making it plain your priority is not to drive down debt and deficits. What's happened to the Democrat presidency of Bill Clinton that's turned into – you know, this chasm of where Biden, who wants to raise $5 trillion in taxes, and it's just $5 trillion more in spending. Nothing about the debt and deficit. So, look, this president is not serious about this. He thinks that this will continue forever. He actually, his administration, by the fruit, they believe in quantitative easing, that this thing will not have a consequence. And then also part of their budget, John, is they want to give, you know, we heard the State of the Union, $5,000 checks for housing. And I said to her, do you not realize in 3 years the average median home has increased $100,000 in 3 years? What was a $400,000 home is now a $500,000 home.
And they also got a lot higher interest rate, right?
And to your point, I had mentioned that. And I said, have you not seen the stats that show we've gone from anywhere from like a $1,400 a month payment on a 30-year average home fixed mortgage, and just the interest rate turns that $1,400 per month mortgage now into a $2,200 a month, you know, not quite a thousand, but not much less than, and $1,000. No, that's a 30-year mixed, 30-year fixed mortgage, just the change of interest rates. And yet they're wanting to do more deficit spending that costs $47 billion for this housing program that they're proposing, free-handed giveaway. I said, you're defeating your purposes. You're going to continue devaluating the currency, drive inflation, drive interest rates. I mean, it's a self-inflicted wound. They don't get it.
It is extraordinary to watch. I had an advisor to Bill Clinton. I was with him recently ago, this advisor from the 90s. And he said Bill Clinton of the 90s would be a Republican today. He was strong on the border. He was strong on balancing the budget, worked with Newt Gingrich. And obviously Bill Clinton became a lot more liberal since then. But the Bill Clinton of the 90s sounds much more like a Republican than his own party today, which is so far out there. I want to talk about that RSC blueprint one more time, because you mentioned a couple of the elements of what the Biden budget does. Raise taxes, I think, by $5 trillion over quite a period of time.
That's the size of the gross national debt under Clinton, was less than $5 trillion, by the way. Biden would raise taxes over 10 years, that amount. What took 200 years to get to under Clinton administration of gross national debt, Biden would raise that amount in taxes and not put anything towards deficit reduction. They'll tell you otherwise, but it is just more spending, more giveaways.
Yeah. Now, the Republican version of the 2025 budget, which I do think people could get excited about, it over a seven-year period, you bring down the deficit and you reduce taxes by $5 trillion. And by the way, it's important for people to remember that the Trump tax cuts actually created more revenue to the government by taxing government, because the economy grew faster. The government got more taxes at a lower tax rate. That's the big two changes in this RSC. When you look at Biden versus Republicans, the deficit and taxes, entirely different visions for America, right?
Yeah. Look, we went under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. You went from $3.5 trillion in 2017 before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was fully fiscal year realized. You had $3.5 trillion in revenue coming in. Now you're almost $1 trillion ahead of that. And you got to think that through. Hundreds of years of history to get to $3.5 trillion in revenue. In 3 years, you find yourself with almost $1 trillion more. So, now, John, I don't want to be duplicitous. I'm one of those people who believes when you do tax cuts, you also need to do spending cuts. And I think, you know, for Republicans who are hearing this, who may have some teachability left in them, I was raised on Tom Coburn. He was somebody I worked for 20 years ago. And he was one of those. He would chastise Republicans, and I will today as well. When we do tax cuts, yes, I believe in dynamic scoring. I believe there's a 40%, you know, as much as 40%. Many times you do tax cuts, you're going to get about 40% more revenue. And you'll be statistics to bear that out. But I think also you have to be courageous enough to say we're also going to do spending cuts. And so that's what these budgets do, both the RSC budget that Kevin Hearns put out and Ben Klein, and I'm on that little task force. It gets to 7 years, and by the seventh year, it's a balanced budget. And then the budget committee that I'm on under Jody Arrington, the formalized committee, we've got up to 10 years getting to balance. And so whether it's the Jody Arrington or the Kevin Hearn, there's a blueprint out there. But Republicans have to have the courage to cut. And until Republicans start going home and teaching the constituency, the math doesn't lie. We have to grow, yes. We have to grow the economy, unleash energy dominance, but we got to cut spending. And until there's more demand among the populist sentiment for cutting spending, inflation is going to continue, John. And for every listener out there, don't show up to your town hall saying to the member of Congress, what bacon are you bringing home? That's what's ruining Republicans. You show up to those constituent meetings and you say, I want to know what you're doing to cut spending, because whatever you tell me you're bringing home, you're losing it because of devaluation of my currency. You can pretend you're bringing home through all these earmarks and deficit spending. Whatever government program you're giving me, Congressman, it's not enough to compound the 20% loss of dollar value just since 2017. We've lost 17% of the dollar value just since 2017. So my admonition to everyone who's got a Republican Congress or Democrat Congressman, judge them by their fruit, by if they're willing publicly in front of their constituents to embrace cuts.
It's pretty amazing. It really is. It's extraordinary. Well, one of the things we do know, you are on the forefront. We had Congressman Klein on yesterday. The vision for how you shrink government, shrink taxes, shrink the debt, shrink the deficit is laid out in this very new plan that people are just starting to read. The last question I'm going to ask you, Republicans will head home to ask for reelection in November. Without the key deliverables that they told people they wanted to be in power to do. They won't be able to close the border. They won't have any real spending cuts. I think you're $30 billion above Nancy Pelosi's budget, and that doesn't include Ukraine yet, which is coming down the path. What is the message? How do Republicans square with the voters that, hey, we're trying, but we didn't do it. Here's why you should give us another 2 years.
look, I don't. I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell people I've been voting against this stuff. That's what I'm going home. That's what I've been. We've done almost 80 town halls in the year and a half since I got elected. Almost 80 live. Yeah, I've done almost 80 live town halls. My constituency's had access to not just the telephone town halls where you call people, but we've done 80 live town halls where I can have people square off with me, read my body language, and figure out if I'm a theatrics or if I'm really genuine and want to do something about spending. And I get sick and I comment with colleagues about the theatrics of posing for the cameras up here, campaign conservatism that never pans out. That's why before my comment before the other question, go find your member of Congress, get a read on them. Yeah, there's going to be pain ahead for us, but either we were headed to a sovereign debt crisis within 10 years, because that's about the time Social Security and Medicare hit insolvency, when the average American is going to demand, man, 25% cut to Social Security in 2033, what the actuaries say, and when everybody says pull out the general fund to offset that loss to grandma and grandpa who had a $1,400 average check, now it's $1,100. You know what? Every member of Congress who's going to take the chicken way out, they're going to push the easy button and tell the Federal Reserve to print more money, tell the Treasury to print more money. That's the chicken's way out, which is going to just compound inflation and hyperinflation. What everybody needs to be bracing for and telling their member of Congress, I want to see your votes. For when the Freedom Caucus, by the way, we are the ones putting these amendments up, amendment after amendment, to cut spending, you need to ask them, are you among the 80 to 100 Republicans who consistently vote no against those Freedom Caucus amendments to cut spending? Find that out. Go look it up. And that's how you make it popular for people when we put those amendments up on the floor for people to embrace them, because their constituency says, I noticed your name wasn't on that.
Yeah, no, that's it. The record is going to be clear on who was serious and who wasn't when it came to cutting spending. Congressman, we always enjoy the conversation with you. You have been honest about where you stand. You vote your conscience. You say what you mean, and you mean what you say. And I think your votes, including tomorrow one, you're going to vote no against the spending bill. They're going to resonate back at home as a guy who delivered what he said he was going to deliver. Great to have you on the show today. Such an honor.
Don, appreciate you. Sorry about the buzzing. That's the voting.
Yeah, duty calls, I hear. It's no problem at all. You go vote, and we sure appreciate your time today, sir. It means a lot to us.
Thanks, man. Bless you. See you.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. When we come back, former U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler from Georgia is going to join us. She's on the forefront of trying to change the mindset of the Republican Party when it comes to early voting. Really good interview. You're going to want to hear what she's doing, what she's saying. She's also a champion of women's rights. We used to run a WNBA team. We used to co-own a WNBA team. She has something to say about some of the historic cases that Riley Gaines and others are fighting. I think you'll want to hear that and be sure of it. Hey, staying on the health kick for a second. Remember, if you are wanting to take a crack at your health and say, I've been letting it go too long. My waistline's a little thicker. My blood sugar's up a little too high. My cholesterol is not where it should be. I feel a little sluggish. Well, do something for yourself. I know going into a complex, healthy diet takes time. Maybe you don't have it now, and that's your excuse, right? Well, I got one. It just takes a couple of minutes a day at most. And it's from one of my great friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens. It's an incredible opportunity to get 5 doses of your vegetables and fruits that you need in a single scoop of powder. You put it on your eggs. You put it in your drink. You put it in your tea. Someone told me they put it into some sort of banana peanut butter concoction. It was delicious, they said. Amanda, my co-host on TV, she puts it into a shake, particularly the fruit one. She likes it. It tastes great. One scoop a day, it's completely improved my life. I've lost weight. I've lost my blood sugar down. I brought my cholesterol down. I brought my metabolism up. I've got more energy. I look great. I feel better. Now, I want you to have an opportunity to try this and see if it works for you. It's nutrition the way nature intended, meaning from vegetables and fruits. Now, for our listeners here, Field of Greens is giving you 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping. So 15% off, free rush shipping. All you got to do is visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS. Now, Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you're going to love this product. It works. But if for any reason you don't like it, it isn't working for you, they'll give you a 100% money back guarantee. How about that? Remember to get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Go to fieldofgreens.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. Promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. All right. Quick commercial break. Kelly Loeffler right after this.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. We've been talking a lot about how the rules of elections have changed, how the expectations of voters have changed, and how Democrats got ahead of that game. But my next guest, I think, has done more than anyone I can think of in conservative circles to get Republicans playing by the rules of today and making sure that elections are easy to vote, hard to cheat. And part of that is mastering an early voting, early registration, early mobilization system. If you remember a few months ago, we had former Senator Kelly Loeffler on the show. She has made some extraordinary gains in her greater Georgia effort to mobilize voters. And we're going to bring her back for an update because this is where elections are going to be won. These are the trenches where the 2024 election are going to be won. Senator, great to have you back on the show.
What an honor to be with you, John. Thanks for having me on.
You are doing, I think, one of the most important ground games that has been created in the 21st century. You know, the Republicans had a great ground game in the 20th century, particularly with Christian voters and the Christian Coalition and the Richard Viguerie direct mail. But the rules in the 21st century changed, and Democrats, I think, got ahead. The Greater Georgia Project, I think, is really equalizing things very quickly. You had a big impact on the 2022 elections, and now even a bigger one, I think, coming up with the 2024 elections, right?
Well, this is for all the marbles. And coming out of 2021, the largest Senate runoff in American history, I decided that, you know, we needed to learn from the past so that we didn't repeat it, and really built a roadmap for Georgia as a battleground state. We shouldn't be a battleground, and we can walk through the number of reasons that we shouldn't be. But I also think what we're doing here is really a roadmap for, you know, all battleground states across the country. And it really starts with taking a responsibility for our elections locally and for our mobilization.
Yeah, it's something really simple, but it's a thing. And you see in the places where people have gotten that mobilization, got that early voting, realize that particularly on the conservative side, there are people working two and three jobs trying to make ends meet in the Biden economy. They may not be able to vote on election day. Getting them to vote early is a win for them and a win for the party. Do you think the mindset has changed? Certainly the RNC is talking a very different language today than it did a couple of years ago. Do you think the Republican Party is ready to mobilize the same way Democrats have been mobilizing?
Absolutely. And we're actually seeing that. Georgia just had its presidential preference primary, and we see it. Republicans turned out 2-1 to Democrats. Now, admittedly, they don't have a candidate that people are excited about. We do. But the ground game was very strong. Early voting was about 46%. That's pretty strong and, you know, very consistent in a primary. Absolutely. And so, you know, mail-in was limited. It was like 2.5. Democrats had 5% mail-in, but the we were about even in terms of early voting, election day voting. So we're there. Now it's going to be about turnout. And this election is going to be about turnout. We had record turnout in 2020. We've got to, you know, make sure that we get everyone out. That's what Greater Georgia is doing. I founded it based on three principles that I saw not being done, that we needed to modernize the conservative playbook, keep the tent up year round, not take it down, stop being transactional, particularly with diverse communities. So we had really yielded the monopoly on voter registration to the left. We've been doing that nonstop at supermercados, going across the state at churches and, you know, reaching out to black churches and, you know, diverse communities of from all walks of life. But what we've also been doing is defending election integrity and really being a watchdog so that people trust the process. I mean, the voter turnout in this country is alarmingly low, and people need to know that their vote counts, but they also need to know that they understand the issues, and we're doing a lot of issue advocacy.
You hit it on the head, and I think the greatest learning lesson is that elections is now a 24/7, full year, 365-day dynamic, and you have to keep engaged. We see in the polling data in Georgia and across the country that Black and Hispanic voters are leaving the Democratic Party, and there's this enormous opening in the Republican Party. And looking at some of the registrations lately, just some of the early registration data, I think you're starting to see Black and Hispanic voters starting to register as Republicans. That's something you're probably on the leading edge of, but you have a pretty good sense of this migration between parties.
Absolutely. This should be a historic year for minority voters and their turnout. So we now see, thanks to a New York Times Siena poll, Trump and Biden are within the margin of error with Hispanic voters. That's a huge shift.
Yes, that is.
The left has lost 20% of black voters. Yeah, it's an earthquake. And why is that? It's because the issues that are impacting hardworking families don't matter. Like, it's not a skin color issue. It's an opportunity issue. It's the inflation that is undercutting their ability to provide for their family. It's an open border policy that's making our country less safe and secure. And it's the weaponization of the courts that you see, where people, you know, are very concerned about, you know, the criminal justice system being turned on political opponents instead of hardened criminals.
Yeah. And then you got the Ground Zero case with Fannie Willis. What is your, as you look out, I see the judge in the last 24 hours has given a okay for this to appeal his decision for not disqualifying Fannie Willis. Do you think at the end of the day, Fannie Willis will be disqualified for her behavior?
Well, not only should she be disqualified, she should lose her law license. She should be voted out by the people of Georgia in November 2024. Don't forget, she's on the ballot. She very publicly launched her reelection campaign just 5 days before she dropped the Trump indictment. And by the way, this is a case that shouldn't even be in court. We can't get away from the fact that it was based on an illegally recorded call that everyone was happy to look the other way on. The call was dropped and leaked in the middle as we approached our Senate runoff, a substantial case of election interference. And it's no wonder now that not only is there a state bar complaint, multiple state bar complaints, the State Ethics Commission will be looking at this, the Georgia General Assembly is looking at this, the Fulton County Commission will never look at it, but they absolutely should. And in fact, taxpayers should demand recourse in terms of not only did we have to pay her boyfriend $650,000, we wasted money on this case, let hardened criminals go free while this has been done. And now we're paying to defend her in this ridiculous circus of the findings that she actually appears to have lied under oath. The judge said, Judge McAfee said, she appears to have testified untruthfully. So not only did she have a tremendous lapse in judgment, but in professionalism. So this is what we're dealing with in Fulton County. It just seems to never end there.
Yeah, pretty extraordinary. There's a lot of other things going on. You mentioned immigration. Obviously, Georgia, not only ground zero in the weaponization of law enforcement, but the Lake and Riley tragedy has really captured the nation. And it's really shown the inability of Democrats to not only address the crisis they have, but even to create some sympathy for the family who's victimized by it. They're apologizing for calling the perp an illegal alien rather than dealing with the family who had been so grievously harmed by this tragedy. Is that resonating in Georgia? Is that another place that's going to erode Democratic support? The inability to show even an ounce of sympathy for Lake and Riley's family.
Well, it's huge. And in fact, Lake and Riley's father, not Lincoln Riley's father.
Lincoln, that's Lincoln, right?
Yeah.
Good reminder for him. Yes.
Yeah. Her father is in the Georgia General Assembly this morning speaking to our state legislature. He's absolutely heartbroken. He's calling on the state to protect the citizens of Georgia. Apparently, we have roughly about 1 million illegal immigrants in the state. And in fact, we have some sanctuary cities, despite the fact that there is a state law against it. And I'm really grateful to the I'm grateful that our General Assembly has taken up that issue, and they're going to be hopefully fixing it. And I'm confident the governor will sign into law the requirement now that municipalities cooperate with ICE. And in fact, Athens, of course, was a sanctuary city. They have an activist DA, a Soros-backed DA, that needs to be voted out in November, Deborah Gonzalez, this year as well. So we have a real chance to bring law and order, due process, fairness, and safety back to Georgia, not just in our courts, but in our elections. So that's a big issue here. And my heart and prayers and thoughts are with her family, the community of Athens. And it's a really tragic moment, but I hope it's eye-opening to America that in the safest and most popular of campuses, this is what's happening potentially. And we just have to be vigilant and make sure we close the border. Now, of course, Joe Biden is fighting to keep the border open. The Supreme Court ruled with Texas, and now that's being challenged again. But Biden wants a whole new set of voters. You know, by the time we have the election, we could have 10 million new voters on the rolls. And that's why I continue to fight for election integrity, because we have to watch every single move they make and make sure this isn't going to happen.
Yeah. And I know you've got your radar up and going to be proactive, as you've always been in that court of law. There's one other big ground zero fight going on, remarkably, in Atlanta. Briley Gaines filed her lawsuit there challenging the injection of biological men into women's sports. You've been a champion of women's sports for so long. Former co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, a WNBA team, very successful. This is an important fight, and I think women feel abandoned by the Democratic Party right now. Now, don't they?
Well, I don't think the Democratic Party can define a woman.
That's a good point. That may be the problem.
that's a huge part of the problem. They're undermining women at every turn. But I will say, yes, I was the first senator in the history of our country to introduce a bill to protect women and girls' sports, because I understand what it did for me. I was a shy, awkward farm girl, and it really helped build my confidence to be able to play sports. And back in 2020, I could only get four other Republican senators to sign on to that bill with me. I led it. Four others joined. It couldn't even get brought to the floor.
I didn't realize that.
If we do not take these issues seriously at the onset, they will grow and metastasize. And that's what certainly Riley Gaines is now having to fight in the courts. She should absolutely not have to be fighting this in the courts. And I'm really proud of her advocacy. And I think every single state should be protecting their women athletes. I mean, the number of injuries that we've seen, the attacks in girls' bathrooms and locker rooms, just the idea that a male should be allowed in a female locker room is insane. So that's what we're dealing with.
It's spread everywhere. It's incomprehensible that in the 21st century we've allowed this to happen. But you've been a champion of it and given women so much opportunity in professional sports through your ownership. It's really a remarkable thing. Last question for you. We're heading into the 2024 election with a president that has a dark cloud of scandal over him. The mainstream media aren't covering it, but you see in the polling data that it's still absorbing it. I think the AP poll last week said 65 or 66. 7% of Americans now believe Joe Biden did something unethical or illegal in his dealings with his son. Despite the media blockade and not really reporting this, the American people seem to have figured out that Joe Biden lied to him and had this sort of influence peddling operation going on under his family, right?
Correct. Joe Biden and his associates continue to lie and cover up. I want conservatives to take heart on this issue, though. The media is never going to cover it, but what I see on the ground every day is that voters know that in Joe Biden's economy, they're less prosperous, they're less free, they're less secure. Elections are about results, and we have a stark contrast to hold up to President Trump's record of blue-collar boom, unprecedented prosperity for our country, no wars versus Joe Biden's failed Bidenomics, multiple wars and threats against our country, and now we've also got his own corruption that everyone knows is being gaslit. So, look, people know on the issues what's going on, and I think we just have to continue to talk to people about what we're for. We're about freedom, opportunity, prosperity for every single American citizen and family, lifting policies that lift people up and don't politically persecute people for their positions. That's why I've been an outspoken advocate for it and supporting President Trump, and I will continue to do that.
There's never been an election, maybe since 1980, where that famous question, are you better off 4 years ago, is more pronounced or more drastically contrasted in the record of the two candidates that are going to compete in November. It's going to be something to see. Senator, it's a great honor to have you on. You are a groundbreaking politician in so many things that you've done in leadership, in the effort to get voters out today. And I think in November, people are going to see nationwide the incredible investment paying off that you've built in greater Georgia.
Well, thank you so much, Don, and I appreciate all the work you're doing. And we certainly don't do it alone. And we're just grateful for the strong grassroots across the country and their continued fight. And we're in it together. So thanks to everyone.
There's a lot of energy in those grassroots right now. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, well, they're lucky to have you at the captain of that ship. So thanks for joining us today. Great to have you on.
Thanks. God bless.
All right, folks, we got one more good one to go. Nicholas Giordano, one of the folks in the academic world, a college professor in New York who is fighting for common sense, fighting for free speech, fighting to defeat anti-Semitism, intolerance, hatred on college campuses, which is, by the way, at an all-time high. He's going to join us right after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, everybody. On Friday, New York Congressman Brandon Williams and Virginia Congresswoman Virginia Fox, both Republicans, introduced the Respecting the First Amendment on Campus Act in an attempt to combat the stifling of free speech at so many colleges across this country. The new bill would mandate schools to protect students and faculty members' First Amendment rights or risk losing their Title IX funding, which makes up a big part of college and university budgets. Joining us now to talk more about this is one of the great champions of campus free speech, campus reform, higher education fellow, and good friend of ours, Nicholas Giordano. By the way, if you haven't got his podcast, the best in the country, be sure to listen to it. Nicholas, good to have you back on.
Thank you for having me, John.
There's nothing like the power of the purse string to get someone's attention. And I think over the last few months, colleges have gotten several rude awakenings. The first came from donors saying, if you don't stop to see anti-Semitism stuff, we're cutting you off. Now, House Republicans saying, hey, if you don't start protecting the speech of every person on campus, you could lose your Title IX funds, which, by the way, make up a big chunk of their change. Is this an effective bill if it gets passed?
Well, to me, this whole thing's extraordinary because as a political scientist, we shouldn't even need a bill like this. We have a constitution and we have a Bill of Rights. Yeah. And in the First Amendment, it's pretty clear, especially considering that we're talking about public institutions. And so you would think that public institutions would respect the establishment of free speech. But as a campus reform higher education fellow, and given all the reporting we've done on the attacks on free speech, this is a necessary bill because free speech is not being respected on college campuses, and our country relies on the concept of free speech. We are the only country in the entire world that has this concept built in to protect our right to speak freely without any type of fear of reprisals. Unfortunately, our higher education institutions aren't respecting that. And it goes against the doctrine of higher education in the first place, right? Debate and dialogue are essential to get to the truth. And that's what higher education exists for. Unfortunately, they have deviated from that long ago. And instead, they want to silence and censor anyone and anything that they deem as harmful or offensive or hateful. And that's in the eye of the beholder, right? These are the same people that say words are violence. But if I call for, let's say, enhanced border security, well, then they label that as hatred of immigrants. So I think this is a necessary bill, and there's nothing that get the colleges moving than when you threaten the funding.
Yeah, for sure.
Education is getting pushback on your own ideas and having to question them and make a, you know, form a reasonable argument. There is something else that this ties into, and it is our immigration system. And I know that you recently wrote an op-ed, Biden's border crisis exposes a toxic education system. Can you peel back the layers of this onion for us?
Absolutely. When it comes to the immigration crisis and our open border, a lot of people are focusing on what's going on in the cities as it pertains to tax dollars being used for housing and food and just the large numbers coming. But people aren't paying attention to the number of unaccompanied minors and minors that are coming in family units. And we're talking about over a million children, 400,000 being unaccompanied minors. And this has several levels to it. First of all, we are a humane nation. And if children are in the United States, we want them to be in schools to get educated rather than be on the streets. But it costs a lot of money to educate those children. In New York City alone, 30,000 unaccompanied minors enrolled in the school system in just 1 year. It costs $38,000 per student per year in this school system. In Denver, we're seeing 300 enrollments per week. The education system cannot sustain that large of a number of people enrolling in such a short period of time. And then at the same time, expect that the quality of education isn't going to decline. It certainly is. That should be obvious to everyone. What I fear, though, happens to impact national security even more. These students came to this country and they were told that this is a country that you're in charge of your own destiny, that you have the way to make it in the United States, to elevate your life and your lifestyle, just get an education and you can succeed and thrive. And it's the freest and open country in the world. However, when they get here, they're going to go through an education system that actually bashes the United States, that promotes anti-Americanism, promotes anti-Semitism, promotes the idea of victimhood and oppressed. They're going to be told that they are going to be victims in this system. And just to give an example, all we have to do is look at the New York State Board of Regents Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Framework, where in this framework, they state that the police are hunting down Black and brown people. They state that every aspect of our lives, we see systemic racism being infused from education to healthcare to infrastructure to the government itself. And so these students are going to be taught to despise the United States. How can they gain a sense of loyalty? Who would want to be loyal to a country that espouses hate, that espouses racism? And so you're going to see an entire generation that grows detached. Now, the shame of it is that our education system used to be the harbinger of assimilation into the country.
Right.
Those that are coming here, they adopt to American culture. They shed some of their cultures. And that's the way it's always been. It's the idea of the melting pot. However, our college universities, as we've been reporting at Campus Reform for over a decade, have decided that the melting pot is a racist microaggression. And so no longer should the cultures that are coming here adapt to American culture. Now America must adapt to the cultures that are coming here, turning us into a tribal society. And this goes to the warnings of George Washington, who said assimilation is going to be the only thing that actually makes this country work. You have Teddy Roosevelt, who warned that we don't want to turn into a nation of, quote, squabbling nationalities. And that's what our education system's pushing, and it's really dangerous.
There was a moment, Nick, and by the way, that was an excellent analysis. I think I've heard a lot of people say we're doing reverse assimilation now, and that is a scary thought to think about. There's a moment where someone who's reached the highest court in the land, Ketanji Brown Jackson, actually suggested during a debate this week that the First Amendment was a sad impediment to government. In other words, it's getting in the way of government. I think that's what the Founding Fathers intended, but she saw it as an obstacle What message does that send to all the young people who aspire one day to be a lawyer, to be a judge, a justice, to hear somebody here actually think that one of the inalienable rights we were granted in our Constitution is an impediment?
Yeah, and her specific word she used was that it hampers the government, right? It restrains the government. And I'm sitting there listening to the line of questioning, and I'm like, well, that's actually the whole intent of it. Yeah. Our Constitution and our Bill of Rights are the most unique documents in the entire world. And they're not just documents. It's a way of life here in the United States. The founding fathers created something that's different. We are one of the youngest countries in the world, yet we have the oldest codified constitution of the world. And it speaks volumes. And the reason it has survived so long is because our constitution was developed to restrain government power. The government doesn't grant us our rights or liberties. These are God-given inherent rights that we have. And the founding fathers understood the threat that government always poses to these rights. So you have a Supreme Court justice that's saying, no, we should err on the side of the government as opposed to the people. And it actually deviates from a lot of the longstanding traditions when it comes to free speech. I mean, this is where we saw Justice Scalia and Justice Ginsburg actually meet on a lot of issues. It was always free speech that they always joined together in their decisions for the most part. So when we have a Supreme Court justice that doesn't realize the importance of the Constitution, it reminds me of the failed education system that doesn't really teach about American history, our founding, our documents, and American civics. If I ask my students, well, how do you have your rights? Most would say prior to getting to my class. Once they get to my class, they know. But prior to getting to my class, most would say it's government that is actually granting them their rights. Yeah. And that's the threat that we're under.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Hey, two quick things. Fieldofgreens.com. Want to get healthy there? Go to fieldofgreens.com. Use the promo code JustNews, 15% off plus free rush shipping. And if you want to get one of those Jace cases, those incredible preparatory emergency kits that have five different antibiotics in case you need them, go right now to JaceMedical.com and use the promo code JustNews. You're going to get a discount on that. These guys are groundbreaking. They're innovating a medical profession in grievous need of repair, of trust building again and preparation. And they're also trying to help solve that supply chain problem that we saw with masks and antibiotics and drugs all across this country. Jace case is a great solution. Five antibiotics. Go to jacemedical.com. Use the promo code JustNews. All right. We will be back tomorrow with regular programming. Until then, God bless you and have a great night.